Do you think Jesus was a good accountant? Like, wow, I never really thought about that. I know he was loving and patient and merciful and graceful. Do you think he would? Yeah, I think he would have been a fantastic accountant because he invented numbers. If he's given someone the image-bearing quality of being a good accountant, the gift, training, education, and developing that gift, not just for the sake of making more money, but for the sake of making a better disciple, a better human.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, the show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I am your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the Chris Young. There's many of them, but there's only one of him. He is the president of the Good Place Institute, which is, in addition to doing good work, is just a really cool title and excellent marketing, as you'll see on his coffee mug later on. He is also a co-author of the book, The Good Place Organization. Wherever fine books are sold, it's right there. If you're on video, you see this. If not, you're just like, what just happened? I heard something fall. But go check that out. It is a leader's guide to stewarding good place organizations. He spent over 20 years researching and developing biblically-based approaches, methods, and resources while leading and helping others build and steward for-profit and nonprofit organizations. He holds a bachelor's in science in business management from, I'm not even able to say this. I should have asked you this, but Canisius. Yeah, see, I told you the sneeze was going to come into it. Canisius, God bless you. In Buffalo, New York. Y'all just gonna have to Google or ChatGPT that, because I didn't do it. Service. He also has a master's of arts, so he's a man of science and art in religion from Trinity International University, part of their Trinity Evangelical Divinity School. He is married to his wonderful wife of 25 years. Congratulations. And they have two adult children, Carson and Tyler. Welcome to the show,
Chris.
Thank
you very much, man. It's an honor to be here. I appreciate you allowing me to be on the show. This will be fun.
It will be a blast. And hopefully we can have more fun with more words that are difficult. It's like when you listen to a sermon and they're like, and they journeyed to hard word and met other hard word, like just skip right over it. It's like, I don't know how to say this in the Greek. My tongue wasn't built for this. Well, tell me, Chris, what is on your mind?
There is so much on my mind. It was hard to narrow it down, actually, but we'll see. We'll see what we can do.
We'll have a mini series with you.
One of the haunting things that's been on my mind for years and years and years is, could probably sum it up in one word, and the word is purpose. And so what's been on our minds lately, what's the purpose? Or more specifically, I believe that there is a creator of the universe, and you could get into the intelligent design theory or argument, if you will, but there's a creator of the universe that created everything with design for a purpose, and that includes work and organizational life and leadership. So what's on my mind, quite honestly and constantly, is, hey, creator of the universe, God of the Bible, the triune God of the Bible, what's your purpose for work, for organizational life, and for leaders of organizations?
I think you're right. We're going to need a mini series even on this narrow narrow topic of God's purpose in work. There's so much that I would love to dive into, in part because I've also been latching on to that term purpose. I've even used it in a lot of my marketing, specifically with like nonprofits gravitate towards this a little bit easier, but there's a lot of for-profits out there that I would say are purpose-driven. But it's how do we translate that purpose? One, did we get clear on it? Have we aligned it with what we're doing? And then have we fully integrated it into every action and decision we're taking? But how do we turn that into performance? Right. And to bring this back into what is, I would say, inherently a theological discussion about, well, people thinking that nonprofits or people thinking churches or just people thinking biblically centered, faith-centered organizations, they're full of purpose, which is to honor God. And somehow that means that we've mistakenly believed it means to be lazy hippies who just hug on everybody. And I'm sorry, I'm starting off fiery.
Wow.
Sorry,
like, bro,
I'm coming in hot. Yeah, And if you have anything that you would like to say in response to what I just said, you can email me at chris.young@goodplaceinstitute.com. But talk to me about what are you noticing? Obviously, in your bio, it mentioned that you've been doing not just anecdotal observation, but really research on this sort of topic for a while now. What are you seeing as the current thinking or prevailing wisdom around God's purpose in work and in building scalable, profitable, well-run organizations?
Yeah, well, obviously, certainly I'm not alone in that thinking. I mean, there's a couple people here. So I work for Good Place Institute, as you shared, that's actually owned by Good Place Holdings. And I've been with that company at Al for 23 plus years. And there's a couple people, a gentleman by the name of Dale Bissonette, who's our CEO, a gentleman by the name of Scott Myers, who's our chair. And over the course of those 20 plus or even more, those two individuals are 15-ish years my senior. So friends, mentors, colleagues, and all of that, and leaders here at our organization. But yeah, and there's a lot of people in the Faith at Work movement, if you will, over decades who've been looking at this and studying this and really looking at, God, what do you care about in the workplace? What's some prevailing thought? I think there's waves of thought. So one potential way of describing this that actually came from a friend of mine that I was talking with was, you know, and I don't know exactly when this occurred or the decade in which it was, you know, the onset of this was, but there was a wave of like, hey, if you're a faith-based kind of leader that owns an organization, be generous. And maybe this happened, this was one of the owner of one of our organizations under the Good Place umbrella, founded the organization in 1965 and did great work, dedicated the company to Christ. But the prevailing, I think, thought at that time was, be generous. And they would make money, do good business and make money and give it away, quote unquote, to make the world a better place, to missions, to nonprofits, to churches, to parachurch organizations. And wow, I think we saw in the 60s, 70s, et cetera, huge mission sending, huge growth in parachurch organizations, et cetera, which is wonderful, right? And then potentially the next wave, and I was trying to put words to this, and I'll call the next wave, and I don't know when it started. I think we still live in it. We'll call it the sprinkling wave, where, man, we kind of still believe in this sacred secular divide, which could be a whole nother topic we talk about, right? And so, hey, continue to be generous, but you know what? And we heard this from churches and pulpits and things like, and let's also be evangelical. Let's also try to figure out, hey, how do we share our faith at work? And how do we be a good Christian at work? And which is wonderful and it's awesome. I would say potentially it's also partial and it's kind of sprinkling Christianity, or I say sprinkling some sacred sauce on top of a secular worldly business model that still defines success as making a lot of money. And if I may then get into the third wave, and I'm hoping that this is becoming the prevailing thinking in the kind of faith at work movement, especially faith-based leaders of organizations, is a more holistic, integrated kingdom mindset of not just leading like Jesus or modeling the king as a leader, but also designing your organization to look like his kingdom.
Yeah, there's a lot to explore there. By the way, you kept saying sprinkling. I was uh-oh. It was ripe for like a Methodist joke, and I left that alone. It's okay. I'm good at generating emails from people who don't like it when I start picking on different denominations. My church, for instance, did not like it when I said I grew up Baptist and then I got saved. But the it's okay. They just submerged their woes. But so I definitely can see that. And I've interacted with different businesses that do have that sort of, okay, we're going to live like we'll run solid thing. We're not going to do anything unethical, but maybe we're not overtly faith-based or centered or anything like that. It's deeply personal, but we're going to be an organization that is generous and makes an impact on the community.
Which is wonderful.
Nothing wrong with that. Right. That's absolutely, I think, biblically oriented. The sprinkling piece, which has been more of the, I'd say, more of the approach methodology that and wave that I've grown up under, I've seen, and this could just be, I don't know if millennials are, or I'm an elder millennial, I don't feel like one, but we're cynical on some stuff. So in that regard, I'm more Gen X of, well, that's like putting a Band-Aid on a bullet wound. Like, it's just, it's a half measure, and it comes across as inauthentic and somehow lacking in integrity from the strictest definition of the word integrity, of just like to be one, like, what you say and do are tightly integrated, is like, I'm going to do all this. And then, like I said, sprinkle some Jesus on it. If anybody out there, if you're listening this far, you probably know who Tim Hawkins is, as a phenomenal comedian. But he talks about prayers that we make over like food that is terrible for us. It's like, dear Lord, change this Cheeto to a carrot on the way down. Put a hedge of protection around my colon. And it comes across that way, which I think has maybe turned some people off from going all in on faith being a faith-centered business. Is that something you found? Maybe it's uniquely my experience, but is there a flaw in that approach that makes you think, hey, this shift towards make the business not just be kingdom-minded, but a picture of a heaven on earth, if you will, example of the kingdom at work.
Yeah.
I know that's a lot, good. But
I'll take an approach where, and this is the majority of the people I speak with a lot of Christian CEOs, faith-based leaders of organizations, and they're very well-intentioned. The generosity wave, the Christian sprinkling wave, I mean, they were looking for the right things to do. And if I may say this, that a lot of the holistic integration of work doesn't come from Sunday morning or wherever, whenever you hear your preaching, so to speak. And so this is where the infiltration of the sacred secular myth enters into our world. There's a decently famous book called Loving Mondays. And the idea was, how do you take your faith from Sunday to Monday? And it was one of those books where you're like, it was a wonderful book, and we were sad that it had to be written, because if you are taking your faith from Sunday to Monday, you're either leaving it behind or you don't have one, or you're bringing what you know of it into the marketplace. So I would say this, most people, almost 100%, are very, very well-intentioned, but we've allowed, I call it learning and unlearning. This is stuff we've learned, well-intentioned tradition, perhaps. And are we willing to unlearn, and We've kind of mixed the worldly success criteria with what we believe would be biblical success criteria. And sometimes we confuse the great commission of making disciples with just making deciders. And maybe we don't realize that the workplace, where we spend the majority of our waking hours, is a fantastic discipleship environment from a holistic discipleship point of view, that we are all, whether you believe or not, we're all made in God's image. You know, the soft skill images that we you know, pretty much think of when we think of an image of God, we think of those soft skills in Christian land. These are the fruits of the Spirit, you know, and we should be discipling the love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, generosity, self-control, you know, those kinds of things. What about the hard skills? What about, I often ask, do you think Jesus was a good accountant? They're like, oh, wow. Do you think Jesus was smart? Like, wow, I never really thought about that. I know he was loving and patient and merciful and graceful. Do you think he would? Yeah, I think he would have been a fantastic accountant, because he invented numbers. So if he's giving you, quote unquote, and bear with me for a little bit here, if he's given someone the image-bearing quality of being a good accountant, the gift, hey, training, education, and developing that gift, not just for the sake of making more money, but for the sake of making a better disciple, a better human. It's a more holistic view of discipleship, and we get to do it in the workplace. It's a fantastic way to extend God's grace in the workplace, right? And so anyway, I could go on and on and on, but I'll pause there.
Well, I love that example, because I also go to, and I'm probably stealing this from, maybe it is from Stella from Tim Hawkins, but I think about, this says Jesus was a carpenter. It's like, what was his return policy for products? Like, did he ever like have a like a wonky chair. Like, Jesus, I got this home and I'm just kind of like wiggling. And he's like, you ever think like the dirt underneath it is unlevel? Like, it, like what sort right? of conversations was he having? Were all of his right angles perfect? You never know. I'd like to believe that they were. But I want to go back to something that you mentioned, which is this notion of good intent, well-intended. And I certainly think we should be well-intended. See, everybody, there's the mug. I told you it was making an appearance. You should have it say, like, the good sip or something like that. Like, there's an evolution of the brand on merchandise. But I run into so many people, Christians and non-Christians alike, that... But if they are more, let's say more heart in their approach to life and leadership and business, and I'm going to include nonprofits in business too, because nonprofits just a tax status. It is not a business or growth strategy, and more people need to hear and understand that. But good intentions are not enough. Like, sure, they're essential, but you didn't take it far enough.
Zealousness without knowledge, is that where you're going?
Hey, for me, it's not just been troublesome, but also as a person of faith, as someone who says, yes, I am also a member of this community, and just like any sort of business that becomes large, that I teach organizations, it's like, your customer service, your frontline people represent the company to your end user, or your customer as much as the CEO. Because like when I call Amazon or go to Walmart or whatever, like I need to make a return, something's not going right. I'm not demanding to meet with the Walton family to address my issue. Certainly they would have the authority to make whatever decision they need to. I'm talking to this person, and this person in this moment is representing the number one in-person retailer in the world, known as Walmart, to me. And it becomes troublesome when I see brothers and sisters out there stopping short by just good intentions. So I want to cheer them on, and I want to say, hey, that's great. You got to start there, but you didn't take it far enough. And the pushback I often get, and this is where, and I know we're not trying to venture into the land of church building and leadership, but I'll wrap on this note, is that I get pushback from people. I've literally had people leave my church of the push I have towards taking our intentions, our purpose, and saying, let's make this actually show up in what we do and do it with excellence. That just being, just feeling, not being, but just feeling loving is not enough. And I'm curious for you, as you see the people who are sprinkling, they're well-intentioned, right? And a lot of our future leaders, they've grown up in these organizations, right? How do you see us making that transition without people feeling like they're sacrificing the soft skills of Christ that you mentioned, and not just be loving, caring, compassionate, empathetic, sort of a wholehearted, but also being that great accountant, that great carpenter, that great leader, that great business mind, that financially shrewd individual who knows how to negotiate a deal and come out ahead and build something that endures. Well, how do you help and talk about that transition? Because I'm finding more and more people struggle with either believing that that's the right thing to do, or they want to do it, but they've never seen it modeled. So they struggle with how to make good on it.
One great question and great point. I will attempt to answer that maybe in a couple different ways.
Please.
One is the practical application, what I would call like the pillar, some pillar teachings of God in his word. The first, I want to say the first because I want to prioritize here. One of them we already mentioned. The sacred secular myth. If you read through the Bible, which we don't need to, you know, get through all of, you know, all the verses that back this up, but, you know, God cares about everything. Everything is sacred. And so we can back that up, but I'll move on to the next one. Everybody's heard of the Lord's Prayer. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. What's the next? Thy kingdom come. And I like to ask, well, yeah, everybody's heard, most everybody's heard of that. Thy kingdom come. I ask, well, where? Well, the next few words is, well, on earth. Excellent. When? Is it now or then? Well, both. Okay. So part of our, right. A little bit, but so part of our job description, at least as people who believe and profess Christ, right, and follow him, we have the unbelievable honor of co-laboring with him and each other to bring about more and more of his kingdom right now, right here on earth. So that's great. And Chris, great. That's great philosophy. I've heard that. Okay, so practically speaking, so here's a question. If your business or your organization was in the kingdom, how would it operate? And so this is one way of viewing this. Like, hey, do you think we'll be working in the kingdom to come in heaven? Like, oh, wow, I never thought about that. I think so. Maybe we don't need some jobs because of this or that, but I think so. Excellent. So when the sprinkling isn't needed anymore, which it's needed now, by the way, it's still needed. We still need to share Christ verbally, and it's great to have a chaplain, and it's great to pray, and it's great to understand how to engage in a conversation in a way that's whimsical and meeting people where they're at, and all of those are wonderful, wonderful things. But when those things aren't needed anymore and your business is in the key, now what does it look like? How does it operate? How are people treated? How well do they do their work? How well, I'm going to get to your, I love your point, the Walton Walmart story. How well does the frontline worker align and is integrated to the total, the collective purpose of the organization? And I know this isn't a commercial for Good Place Institute, but the Good Place Institute, the way we like to describe it is a why, what, how rhythm. Very simply, what's the why? It's God and his word, glorifying God and bringing flourishing to creation and humanity. That's the why. Well, what's the what? Well, what indicates that we're fulfilling that why? We have three main aims. So I'm moving forward. Hey, how do you do this? Like you said, how do you do this? How do you bridge that gap, right? A potential way, and it's not the only way. There's other ways, but we're putting forth a way. What's the what? What are those success criteria or kingdom success criteria that indicate we're fulfilling God's why or God's purpose for organizations? We think he cares about people, or I should rephrase it. We think his word demonstrates, and the meta-narrative of his word says, he cares about people and places, and he cares about what we would call economic regeneration, because that's the currency we need to build up more people and build up more good places. So the idea of people, people flourishing, experiencing, we like this word shalom. They experience purpose, fulfillment, meaning, harmonious relationship with God, harmonious relationship with each other and themselves, and harmonious relationship with creation in our context with the work they do, right? And then building up good places where we work and live. How do we influence people to steward well that which they've been given, or to bring about more kingdom characteristics in our own workplace, but also for our customers and our suppliers and the associations we're a part of and the geographic community we're a part of? How do you do that through the organization and the products and services you make and the skills that you build up, right? And then there's the how-to. How do we do this? How do we align purpose to every person in the organization? And so, again, I don't mean to make this a commercial, but we've assembled and designed what we call the Good Place Organization Operating System. So there are building blocks of an organization that, if you put them in place, allow you to achieve kingdom success criteria and fulfill God's purpose for work and business and organizational leadership. So that was long-winded. I apologize for that, but hopefully that it's a way of connecting the dots for your question, I think.
Yeah, man, there's so much to unpack in what you said. And some of it, again, I love bringing pretty much every guest I bring on is smarter than me. That's why I like talking to them, because I learned something. This is strangely timely for me, and just some things I've been thinking about my own business. But you said something that I want to go back to. And if our business, our organization, institution were in the kingdom, right? Like not here on earth as we exist now. So how would it operate? I don't know why. Like it sounds dumb, because I think about this stuff a lot too. Clearly not on the level that you do, which is why I need to like read the book and do all the things. Is I started thinking, and this could be some freedom for people, because I'm finding even some freedom just in this initial thought, is, well, would I be working myself to death? Would I be moving at a frenetic pace? And there's fine to have a sense of urgency because purpose drives that, but by driving from a oh, somebody's going to be first to market. Somebody's going to be this. Somebody's going to do this. There's not enough pie to go around, right? If it's meant to be, it's up to me, which is a method of thinking. Like, it sounds cute and funny and like, oh my gosh, what a great little saying. But it's infiltrated my own thinking, and something I deal with quite a bit is, if it is meant to be, it's up to me, and no longer am I trusting in God. Now, I'll get up in the morning and I'll read my Bible and I'll pray for wisdom on how to work hard and what people to talk to and what podcast guests to have or whatever. Like, Lord, please bless it. Almost gets into a blessing the Cheeto on the way down sort of thinking. Is like, Lord, I'm just going to work my face off with little to no trust in you, but I'm going to ask for you to bless all of my dispersed and displaced effort in the name of my own sort of glorifying.
Can I jump
activity
in there real quick, Kenny? Because that's a great
point. I would love for you to stop me now.
That, this might get us off on a tangent, but we mentioned the Lord's Prayer, and we were sharing in another group I'm in, kingdom come. Let's just stop right there. And whether you're an individual or whatever role you play in life or roles you have in life, or you're a business leader or whatever, do you really want God's kingdom? Or to your point, do you really want him to bless your kingdom? A lot of times I'll have to admit, you know, darn, right? I really would like him to bless my idea of what the kingdom looks like. And that's why we kind of set out with, you know, researching, you know, God, what's your purpose for business? And we would say, hey, work is a means of grace. Again, one of those main aims, we'd say, hey, how do we, in a business setting, how do we provide the opportunity and encouragement for people to grow to their full potential? Their full potential vocationally, spiritually, financially, physically, emotionally, psychologically, relationally, all those HR wellness categories that make up the whole person, right? It's like, hey, how do they have shalom or how do they flourish and thrive in each of those areas? And as an organization, what's our influence, contribution, responsibility perhaps to them flourishing, especially as they're working here? That could be, I think it is, significant characteristic of God's kingdom, first of all, holistic flourishing, holistic shalom, right? And so how do we bring that into, again, the place where we spend the majority of our waking hours?
Mm-hmm. Lord, we need a longer time. We're going to have to turn this into Joe Rogan Experience with 3 hours. Yeah, welcome to part four of the trilogy. But can you elaborate on, and you've said this a couple of times, on how the good place has started to define God's purpose and work. And he mentioned that it's grace. And that's not, I don't think that's a word frequently associated with work ethic. Now, is it sometimes associated with leadership?
Sure.
Like we've got to give grace here. I would think even people who would not claim that Christ is at the center of their business or to be a believer or of some sort, they would still have an understanding of grace, of sort of like not getting what it is that, or is getting something you don't deserve. It was a mercy is not getting something you did deserve. Can you elaborate on what do you mean by part of the purpose of work is grace?
Yeah. Great question, because I'm with you. Having work and grace in the same sentence is a little bit foreign, right? All right, but again, I like your I like your definition of grace, getting something you don't deserve. So let's just start there. Work. So this is a good place. This is what kind of we would espouse or try to anyway. Work has an opportunity to work on you, in you, and through you. Work in the workplace community, right? On you, in you, and through you to make you something you're not. Something better, something that you could never become on your own. So again, not to over-spiritualize that, but in another context, salvation, that's what Jesus provides us. He, the Holy Spirit works on us, in us, and through us, but Jesus provides us something better. In this case, a rekindled, a restored relationship with him through his life, death, and resurrection, that kind of thing. And he provides something better for us that we could never achieve or earn on our own. So again, that's the spiritual salvific side of grace. But how about the practical side of work being grace? Again, a lot of learning comes through work. A lot of growth comes through work. whether it's work at a vocation or working out, physically working out, it's work and it's making, pumping iron, it makes you better, right? But the workplace community has that opportunity to be that grace and make you better, make those around you better, make the business better, make the industry better, make the whole world better through the work that we do.
Right. I love the on in and through you sort of thing, and not just because it could sound good from a stage. A pastor I listened to said something, so I'm really good at parroting what other smart people say, is he was like, I firmly believe every person was put here on a purpose with a purpose for a purpose sort of thing, like all those different categories. But it also made me think of something I haven't heard or reflected on in some time, is like, as you are working on something, it is working on you, right? Like, so often we think about, we initiate a lot of work, whether it's a new job, a new venture, a church plant, what have you, or a podcast. But it's, you endeavor to do something to exert your intellect, your energy, your effort, the soft skills, your character, on something to produce something. You're like, I'm giving of myself. It's always I'm pouring from this cup to make a thing. In reality, I think it's a both and. It's in the way that you've described it, is that it's also working on you. Like I'll go to one of the clearest examples for me is in parenting.
Great example.
And I have a silly one I can include there just because my brain won't allow me to be sincere and serious all the time. But in parenting, I take that very seriously, as it's my job, and I believe it's all parents' jobs to impart and shape and raise. You're raising adults. You're not raising children. Like their goal is to eventually to go out into the world and be productive members of society and do what fulfill their potential, right? But in the process, as I'm trying to change and shape and transform them as I believe I'm supposed to, it's changing, shaping, and forming me right back, almost like under my nose. Do you see work as something that is like that? I mean, here's my silly version, is there's all these like getting a rescue dog. And I'm not comparing children to rescue dogs, at least not right now. But the idea of like, well, who saved who? Like, I saved the dog, but there's like, you see stories of like veterans that get service dogs and things like that. And it just, the animal does something to help heal them. Like, I mean, we're all like, God created everything. He's in everything. He's working through everything. So if he can make rocks and trees cry out, why can't he work through the majesty of canines? So so silliness aside, is that part of what your research, the Institute's research has found, is seeing, whether quantitatively, qualitatively, of as we do the work, it's doing a work on us and through us, to where there's sort of a mutual shaping that's happening?
Research aside, again, probably qualitative. I think that's just biblical, honestly. And God working on us, in us, and through us through a number of different circumstances and situations and roles of life. And a book I read a while back, a little bit of a tangent, but I think it kind of answers your question there too, is as things happen in your life, in this book, they viewed it as resistance comes, whether you're physically working out at the gym, or you're working and it's challenging or frustrating, or you're working and it's great, or whatever. But really, when resistance comes, what's a parenting moment, a work moment, when there's some resistance or friction or whatever, do you view it as, what's your perspective on it? And in this case, the book was talking about, do you view it as a victim or as a student? And like, wow, for me at that time, that was very powerful to say, wow, God, please help me. We always want to view circumstances in our life as students. God, what do you want us to learn? What are you doing in us or around us? Maybe it's not about us. And yes, I absolutely think and experience in exponentially that work is absolutely a part of that. And are we students? And biblically speaking, I think it's potentially why. In Jesus' famous speech, he comes out of the gate and says, hey, blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those of you who are humble, who obviously, number one, understand your position in front of a holy, righteous God, but also just understand humility and be a student of the circumstance, the resistance, the work, the relationship, the role. God, what are you trying to do? Because the Bible tells us what he's trying to do. He's trying to develop us into our full potential, more and more like the full human that we're supposed to be and that Jesus was.
Right. Is the book you're mentioning, it reminds me of, and maybe it's the same one, The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield?
I don't believe so. I believe it was a Bob Goff, one of Bob Goff's books.
He's good too. Get you a balloon. He's good too. He's got cool stories. Right. What you're describing makes me think of the book, The War of Art. Stephen Pressfield calls it the resistance and gives it a capital R because it could be external circumstances. It could just be the difficulty of the job of something that you're setting out to do. And getting back to a pumping iron, like without resistance, there is no weight training.
We know that that's how we grow.
Right. No muscle can be built apart from that. Even if you just look at like, well, I'm not a weightlifter, I'm a runner. And I was like, okay, well, cool. Well, you have to work against gravity. Repeated resistance against gravity builds a certain amount of muscle. And then depending on where you're running, you may just have like a gale force wind in your face. But that, I love that do we choose to see it as a student, or do we choose to, and there are truly circumstances in which someone is a victim, but as a guy that I really follow and admire, he wrote the book, The Power of TED, which is the empowerment dynamic, and talks about, you have the dreaded drama triangle of like, there's victim, there's a persecutor, and there's a rescuer. And it just like cycles. You can start to see it in television and movies and office drama. And then he says that we could flip those things and move to creator, coach, and challenger. And he creates the distinction between truly when there are moments in which we are victims of something and victimhood being more of that mentality that I hear you describing, is that part is our choice, which I am all for. Like, I think the central message of anything and everything I've ever said, apart from I want it to be biblically based and God honoring, and show that being a Christ follower does not mean being a precious moments figurine, is that you have agency. You have a choice. You always have a choice. And it's terrifying, right? Because we want things such as, oh, it's fate. It's destiny. It's these things. Now, you could say, well, aren't you and Chris just talking about, well, there's a design, there's a bigger design in all of this. Yes, there is. There is a potential, but it's your choice on whether or not to step into that and allow yourself to be shaped, to be molded, to press up against that resistance and say, what can I learn from this? As opposed to, what is this doing to me?
And if I could. So one of the things that we enjoy talking about quite a bit is, again, from a leadership perspective, are you creating, in this case, an organizational design or the environment that allows people to do that, right? To reach full potential, or providing the encouragement to do that? Are you, or are you, we call it this, we want to manage systems and develop people. We don't want to just manage people. Well, why? Because you want to provide an opportunity. Like, well, first, why is we want people to reach their full potential, and we want to help them get there. And work is a part of that, and so are other relationships and roles and things. And it's a mindset shift of how do we view work. But our culture, and again, I don't want to over stereotype, but I make fun of, there's songs about it. I'm working for the weekend, or there's a whole, I'm just working and making money so I can, so in the weekend, or when I retire, I can actually do what I want. Well, that's cultural. Like, I'm not saying work's not hard, and sometimes you take jobs just, you know, to provide, and I we get all that, right? But it's like, I love one of C.S. Lewis's, I don't know, maybe most famous quotes, or one of his most famous quotes, and I'll probably butcher it a little bit, but it's the idea of pleasure seeking. You know, he said, hey, the problem with the human race or human beings is not that we are too much pleasure seeking. We're not pleasure seeking enough. He's like, we're satisfied with making mud pies in the slums, you know, our own version of the kingdom or our own set of success criteria. When God has an opportunity for a holiday at the sea, you know, we're far too easily pleased. You know, so in business, we have our own version of success. When God's got this grander idea of success where humans are flourishing, he's getting glory. Customers are getting all of this kind of, people are getting served. People are getting loved, cared for, treated with honor and respect. Why? Because God's word said we're all made in God's image. So everybody should be viewed and treated that way. How do we create an organizational environment to do that? Mm-hmm. I think it's the best diversity strategy on the planet when businesses look more and more like his kingdom. And so again, another tangent, but kind of what you're sharing, and probably the number one quality is I struggle with this. It takes the quality of humility. God, what do you want me to learn? And what do you want me to unlearn that the culture is trying to teach me that is mud pies in the slums and not a holiday at the sea?
Right. Yeah. I've heard it said quite often, like what the enemy of God's best is what's good. We end up stopping short for something that's good. It wasn't God's best. It wasn't his greatest. It wasn't the holiday by the sea. We chose to go to the Gulf of Mexico and Galveston and thought that was a beautiful beach. No offense to those people down there, but it's not like a Destin, Florida or one of these tropical paradises, right? Where you're saying like, oh, okay, well, there's a sea, there's salty water and there's some sand and some shells. Good enough, right? Like, but if you knew that there was a different option, would you have rather have gone to Tahiti or Fiji or something like that? Obviously not while there's like hurricanes, but that's hard. It's enticing, right?
Yes.
It's enticing.
I like what you're saying. It's
because it's like, it's just,
I was going to say, I like your analogy, maybe a couple of bits about that. Yeah. It's like going on vacation somewhere and it's the first time you've ever been there and you're having a good time and you're discovering things. And then you go back home and I talk to Kenny. He's like, where'd you go on vacation? And I say, well, we went here. And you're like, oh, awesome. What restaurants did you go to? What beaches did you, or whatever you did? Right. And I go, well, we went here and here and here and we had a fantastic time. And you're like, you should have talked to me, you know? I know the best restaurants to go to. I know the best beaches to go to. I know the best views of those mountains. I know that I've been there a million times. And if you want to take it to the next step, you go to God who created it all and you say, hey, I know the best views of the, just for fun on that one. But yeah, it's like in John 10:10, the book of John in the Bible, Jesus says, this is why I've come. Yes, he came to save sinners, right? He says, I came that you could have life. And life to the full. And so what does a full life look like? What is, you know, again, we like to use this word shalom. A full life looks like a life. It doesn't necessarily look like I have a ton of cars and yachts and houses and stuff. No, it looks like no matter what's going, there's a book out there called Into the Depths of God, Calvin Miller, and he calls it scuba diving shalom. No matter what's going on in the world, your life is still full and purposeful and meaningful because you have a deep relationship, right? You're scuba diving, snorkeling versus scuba diving. Snorkeling, you're in the water, it's beautiful, you're seeing the stuff in the ocean, but you're still being tossed by the waves. If you're scuba diving, you're up close and personal with that beauty. The waves still come, but there's stillness in the depths of the water. You're scuba diving, right? So we have a phrase here, a good place. Mm-hmm. Who's like, how do we build up hearts of love and lives of shalom? Because life is going to deal you lots of different waves, right? How do we have, that depth of shalom?
Paul talks about this. But he says, I've learned to be content then. I've had wealth and riches and all sorts of things, but I've had a full stomach. But I've gone hungry, I've been shipwrecked, I've done all these things. And that to me, not just because he was shipwrecked, so maybe he could use some scuba gear, but he really did. There was a stillness on the inside of him that came from that reflecting the kingdom on earth as it is in heaven, right? Getting back to the Lord's Prayer, a friend of mine and an author, Tim Spiker, who wrote the book, The Only Leaders Worth Following, in his research, they were like, well, what makes an effective leader? And they drew it down to eight different things. And I was like, okay, this is a good eight. Well, two of them, when they looked at the weight of the items, because they weren't equally weighted, two of them accounted for 77% of what the respondents said made an effective leader. And they were the only two that described who the leader was. The other six described what a leader does. And those two things were being inwardly sound and others focused. And a lot of what I hear you, and that's a long path to take to what you're describing when I think of that scuba diving, that shalom, that peace, that fullness of the waves are going to come. I mean, we're guaranteed that in scripture, but there's that inwardly sound, that stillness, that if we are scuba diving as opposed to snorkeling in through life, that we can withstand those things. It doesn't mean that they don't affect us. It doesn't mean that they can't be hard. I mean, you and I were talking before we hopped on the call of just like stuff I did not choose to have loved ones and those near to me pass away, even expectedly or those have been hard things for me to process through. And to be honest, and I talked to a friend about this, it's like, I don't know how people go through things like this of just tragedies of life that come up without being tethered to, rooted in a faith in Christ. I have no idea. Maybe I'm a weak human being, but I don't know how they do it. And a lot of what I hear you say is like, if we as leaders, because to draw it back to leadership, we get a disproportionate amount of attention. We get a disproportionate amount of influence. And when we think about what makes us as a leader worth following, and to draw it further still of when we are verbally professing a faith in Christ as a leader, whether in a church, a nonprofit, a for-profit, whether it's Christ-centered in its mission or that's not explicit, we are going to take on a disproportionate amount of attention and scrutiny over our decisions, even if we're surrounded by other believers. And all the more reason to be that scuba diver, to be in that place of shalom, to be as forgive me if I said it wrong, but to be a, like, we're managing business, but developing people.
Yeah, the Bible calls that discipleship.
I think the importance of it. Yeah. What a novel idea, right? That discipleship could have. It's not building deciders, as you were saying at the top of the conversation. And so we're thinking about this leader who's listening here, who says yes and amen, that this resonates. I purpose myself. I endeavor to be more like what Chris has been describing. It's given me language that I didn't have before, or it's just connected dots I didn't have before. And they say, maybe I'm not the owner and I can't turn this into a good place, as maybe the Good Place Institute defines, which great material. Go to the website, please. Go check that out and read the book. But maybe they say, with what I have influence over, I want that to be a good place and I endeavor to be a good leader. What's something they can do in the next 24 hours, little to no money, to take a step towards that, to exercise their agency and how they show up as
great,
a leader?
Great question. Maybe my first answer is going to be a little cliche. Dive into the Bible, read it. Whether you believe,
read the Bible, it'll bless you.
The inerrant word of God, or it's just the best-selling book of all time. Read it, read it for relationship, not just for information. But the meta-narrative of the Bible gives us unbelievable clues of what, obviously, who God is, what his kingdom looks like, how we can relate to him, how can we understand his design and his purpose. And then we can apply that to all areas of life, all of our roles that we get to take on or we have the opportunity to play. You know, as you said, as a potential, as a friend, as a spouse, as a son or a daughter or a worker or a leader or all of the above, or a spouse or whatever. Read. I would say this too. Next step, if you're a leader, and again, some of those dots got connected or whatever, I love talking with people. I love having coffee. I love doing virtuals. Throw me an email. jump on our website and connect with us. We would love that. And if you want to grab the book first, that's great too. But maybe those are just a few practical things that, like you said, somebody can do in the next 24 hours. Pray about it. God, what are you doing? What are you doing around? What are you doing in me, on through me, around me, that I can co-labor with you to bring about more and more of your kingdom characteristics, so that more, this is a good place, right? So that more and more people can experience your kingdom, and therefore more and more people get to experience the King himself.
Yeah, which I think there's those simple questions that can really make us reflect on the decision. So just even that slowing down to be more thoughtful around these things. So that's excellent. We're certainly going to link up the book, which can be purchased wherever fine books are sold. But if somebody does want to reach out to you and have that virtual coffee, or just throw a few follow-up questions that for whatever reason I didn't cover because I was making silly metaphors, where can they connect with you, The Good Place, and then also talk for just a minute about your podcast?
Yeah, so easiest way, you're welcome to grab our website. We have a contact us kind of thing, and we get back to you and all that. chris.young@goodplace.com. That's my email address. You're welcome to throw me an email. Love to chat. And about a podcast, we've taken a little bit of a hiatus. We look to getting back on board, but it's called Business is Good. But that'll give you some ideas of the why and the what, and we're getting into the how-to part of it, The Good Place operating system. How do we build organizations that are set to achieve, again, biblical success criteria and fulfill God's purpose for this? The podcast might be a good place to start as well. That might be another good thing in the next 24 hours. If you want to, check out the podcast, it's on the website. It might bring up some questions or some thought, and we'd love to hear your feedback on all that. That'd be great.
Absolutely. And I would love to thank you so much for being a guest. This is a phenomenal conversation. I have like 14 other questions, ideas, topics that are probably coming to mind. Would definitely love to have you back to talk about like what are the components of a good place organization, and maybe get a little bit more practical and tactical around some of those things to help people take those steps. Thank you so much for being a guest. Certainly hope you'll come back again. Thank you to all you listeners. Obviously, otherwise I'm just having like really cool conversations and I get a lot out of that, but I'm doing this so that you get value. And one way you can let me know if this is of good value is to give me a subscribe for the show, rate, review, like, follow, whatever the right button and call to action is on the platform that you like the best. Leave a comment. If there's any feedback, any way I can make this better for you, I want to. Although I am going to tell you, like I would tell anybody I've ever led before, your feedback does not necessarily mean I'm going to take action on it, but I will consider it. But that also gets this in front of other leaders. So you never know what conversation, what topic could unlock somebody's like just next step to take them from point A to point Z. And this could be a free and easy way for you to make a dent in the universe and help somebody else on their leadership journey by giving it more attention. But until next time, change the way you think will change the way you lead. We'll see you.